It's about a sensible use of bulls. You know, I'm not trying to make any huge overcorrections here with bull teams. I want to make small incremental gains that are sensible, and then see the reality of it on the ground. And it's, I suppose, probably what we talked about the most when we did sit down and look at them. So it's actually a better team than we had last year, and we should develop much better carcasses and carcass weights. I think just between me and my customers, like, the relationship is important, I suppose. They expect me to deliver them a good calf. You know, I hope that they will be successful with that calf going down the road.
Hello, I'm Stuart Childs, and you're welcome to the Dairy Edge, the Chagas Dairy Podcast. We're bringing you latest information, insights and opinions to improve dairy farm performance. In the past, beef calves from dairy cows was about getting a beef breed calf with not a whole lot of emphasis on the quality of the calf. This resulted in deterioration of the quality of the beef of dairy origin. However, greater emphasis on beef characteristics is paying dividends in delivering better beef without compromising calving traits. Today, I'm joined by David Gannon, Chagas Arrivo Joint Programme Monitor Farmer, who's also a Dairy B 500 Ambassador Farmer, along with John McCabe, Arrivo Joint Programme Monitor Farm Advisor, who outlined the dairy beef plan for David's farm following consultation with Tommy Cox, who is a Dairy B 500 Advisor. I started by asking David to give us a little bit of background on his farm and his dairy breeding plan for 2024.
Yeah, thanks, Stuart. So David Gannon is my name. I'm farming in a place called Kilkenairn in County Galway. It's a rural area between the towns of Loughrea and Athenry. This year we're milking 170 cows. The background breeding of the herd will be crossbred genetics, and over the last few years, we've been using high EBI black and white sires, and just trying to improve cages and mixed solids fertility and fat and protein PTAs, I suppose, would be our focus. We have heat detection aids. So we use collars for breeding for the cows, and having the background crossbred breeding, we really want to put a focus on improving the beef sires and generating all of our replacement heifers from the cow herd through the use of sex semen. So there's 170 cows running this year. There'll be 55 sex semen straws used on the cows to generate replacement heifers. And then the rest will be dairy beef bulls.
Okay, so John, we'll say, is David on his own now in terms of that kind of a plan, or what are you seeing across the West in terms of dairy breeding plan, and then the beef follow on to that as well?
Yeah, so I can speak on, I suppose, observations I've made and analysis I've done on group discussion groups that are linked to the Arrivo joint program, and we've seen a swing towards more beef calves hitting the ground say over the last 3 or 4 years. And all you have to do is talk to any of the AI companies to find out about the sex semen. It's selling out earlier and earlier every year. So there's a big switch towards sex semen. People are trying to reduce the amount of bull calves and increase the amount of beef calves coming off their herds.
And I suppose, John, is there any concern in relation to, we'll say, if are people flipping over too much to beef, and is there a risk that they won't generate enough heifers? Are you happy enough that people are clued into that piece and that they'll generate their 22, 23, 24% maybe calves on the ground anyway to have that 18, 20% replacement rate in due course then?
No, what we've actually seen is people in their first year or two of using sex semen have probably gone in with a bit of conventional as well, and they're actually ending up with surplus heifers. So there's no fear of that yet. And I think what's starting to happen this year is people are actually sitting down and only breeding the exact number of heifers they need, due to whatever, nitrates, labor, and maybe the lack of a market for extra heifers. And I suppose in terms of the amount of beef calves that are hitting the ground, there's definitely a big swing towards AI. So 3 or 4 years ago, a lot of the beef calves were coming off stock bulls, and now there's a move towards more beef bred dairy beef calves hitting the ground. So AI bred dairy beef calves hitting the ground.
Yeah, I suppose, David, with the collars obviously in place, that facilitates you doing AI for quite a long period of time, because obviously the big challenge with AI is that as activity reduces, it gets harder to spot them. But the collars are going to help you mitigate against that. Is your plan to use AI for across, we'll say, right through the breeding season, or are you going to still leave off some bulls at the end or what?
Yeah, no, so that was one of the major focuses, I suppose, that the reason we went with the heat detection aids was because we were 100% AI. And the way our farm is set up, we have to cross public roads in two spots, and the bulls just added a bit of a nuisance factor as well. But I suppose like the real benefit of AI from that perspective as well is the reliability that you can actually get in the bulls. You know, so you have a lot of calving records, you have a lot of confidence in the bulls you're using, as opposed to a stock bull, where you mightn't have, you know, you can see on paper that they could possibly have a, you know, calving ease. But in reality, you know, the reliability wouldn't be there to back that up. So, there, you know, AI has a, I suppose, a significant advantage there.
Okay, so you're going to use 55 sex draws on the cow herd. What's the plan with the heifers then as well?
So the heifers are with a contract rearer and they get a fixed time AI program. We use conventional semen on the heifers. So there's 40 heifers and there's 37 conventional dairy straws going to be used and 3 conventional beef straws going to be used.
Okay, and I suppose just coming back to your point about the reliability and so forth in relation to that now, the 3 beef bulls that you've used there, obviously on heifers, high number of calving records behind those bulls that you're using there, so that you're guaranteeing an easy calving, even if it is a bull calf.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, so there are a lot of records available on a number of bulls we've used over the last few years, and I would have confidence in them. And yeah, so like it is a bit of a no-brainer there to use them really easy calving bulls on the heifers. Yeah.
And then I suppose still focusing on the dairy side, yet we have to jump into the beef, but how come you've decided not to breed those particular, or those 3 heifers to dairy AI?
So I suppose when we genotyped them, the results that came back weren't what I suppose didn't meet the minimum threshold that we have for genetic gain and genetic merit. So like we just run, I suppose, a very simple system. You know, it's in or out. So they just didn't meet the same criteria. So I don't want to generate a replacement from them.
They just didn't make the cut, as they say, for in golfing terms. Yeah. Okay, so David, like talking to John and yourself there, obviously in relation to or preparing for this, like it's not just using beef AI. There's a plan around the use of the beef AI as well here. So do you want to explain to people what that plan is? And John, feel free to hop in and out here along with David now in relation to this. So like it's not just I'm going using beef straws from obviously from day one of when you're using the sixth on the dairy. There's the type of beef you're using, the breed of beef you're using, the time that you're going to use it. You've thought put into all of this. So explain that.
Yeah. So yeah, I suppose I have the benefit of the advice from John and Tommy Cox, and we did a very good session on picking bulls and basically developing a strategy for the farm or for the herd. I suppose the first important point is that we have customers that we sell calves to every year. We actually rear some calves for customers as well. So we have a specific demand, a specific market fulfilled there. So we'll generate them as we go through the breeding season as well. And I'll explain to you what we're going doing for them customers. But as a general strategy, so to start the breeding season, we're actually starting beef AI 5 days before mating start date of dairy AI or sex semen. And I suppose that is just to accommodate the gestation length of one of the bulls we'll be using early in the breeding season, which will be a limousine. So there is excellent, I suppose, carcass merit and with relatively easy calving, but the trade-off will be gestation length. But I suppose how we're going to compensate for that is just use them mating start date minus 5 days, and then use them for 5 days into the first week of the breeding season. We're also going to use 2 Belgian Blue sires from mating start date, I suppose, for the first 3 weeks. And the purpose is to generate 25, 35 calves that I can move off farm say around the 20th of between the 20th of February and the 1st of March. So calves that would, I suppose, maximize the carcass and genetic merit for the beef traits from my herd that I can move off to customers and move off farm. I suppose that'll fulfill a number of things for me. You know, it'll free up labor, free up shed space, you know, which is all important at that time of the year.
Okay, so you're starting early with the limousine, obviously, because even the short gestation limousines are long gestation at the moment. Whereas the Belgian Blue obviously has that luxury of maybe they can be -1, -2 days, but you're using they're bringing the beef to compensate for your crossbred background, effectively.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so you know, for relatively small. Small differences in the calving difficulties, you know, you can generate a lot more carcass weight, and you know, it just would be a different product that we can sell not at a premium value, but just, you know, they would be easier sell from the farm. That's the strategy. We also have two Aberdeen Angus bulls picked for the first 3 weeks as well to go alongside the bulls. So like overall, we'll be using 4 bulls full-time from week 1 to 3. And I suppose the purpose of that as well is just to have a reliable bull team where we're spreading risk across a number of sires, the same way we would with the dairy strategy. And then I suppose for the existing customers and returning customers that we have, you know, Aberdeen Angus is what they want. You know, they fulfill the criteria where they're, you know, they're age at slaughter, and they're kind of a dual purpose breed that can be put in calf, where they'd have relatively good Eurostar values to fulfill that skep need. And also they can carry a good bit of carcass weight, and they demand the premium in the factory as well when they're finished. So, you know, that is a specific need for them customers. So we have 2 bulls picked. I suppose one bull that we have used last year, and we're adding another bull and this year, just the Aberdeen Angus. So they'll be run for the middle 4 weeks of the breeding season. And that should fulfill the customer's need. And then, you know, from talking to John and Tommy and just looking through the available bulls with enough calving records, you know, the team that we've put together for that mid-season, like, will deliver, you know, a much better quality calf than even we've delivered this year, based on the bulls that we would use in last breeding season. And like, it didn't actually move our calving difficulty up a percent. It's actually 0.1% of the difference. But there's a 150% increase in the carcass merit. And there's actually an improvement in the gestation length as well. So just from, you know, studying the beef merit traits and understanding them and getting a better education myself, from the guys on it, you know, you can move the dial fairly significantly with relatively very small, you know, very small differences in I suppose what would be considered probably a heavier weighting towards the cow to get her back in calf.
So you're basically saying that you're getting the results without any major compromise, effectively nearly no compromise, really.
Yeah, so it's actually a better team than we had last year, and we should develop much better carcasses and carcass weights. So yeah, exactly, George. Yeah.
Okay. So John, you've looked at figures from across the groups, and you're asking this figure or this question at your group meetings in relation to the quality of the calves that are being generated. Do you want to just kind of fill us in relation to that? You're seeing something. You're seeing a year on year improvement in terms of the quality of the calf. And we want to see the same thing happen again now for the calf crop that's born in 2025. So, do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we looked at the 2021 calf crop. I got data from ICBF, and thanks to ICBF for giving it to me. It drove great discussion on farms. We looked at the quality of the 2021 calf crop, and then we followed up this year looking at the quality of the 2024 calf crop. So basically, what was the beef sub-index of the sires that were used last year in the breeding season? And what was the beef sub-index of the sires that were used in 2020? And like we've observed a large improvements in the quality of that in terms of the beef sub-index has nearly doubled, I would say, in that time, on average for a good number of groups. And it's coming from overall beef sub-index. But if you were to hone in on one thing, you'd probably say that the carcass weight of the sires has improved a lot. I suppose myself and fellow advisors in the catchment, we've been discussing this with groups each spring, and our angle has always been around labour. So for labour for the dairy farmer, and then also about creating an animal that that'll leave profit for the person that's rearing them and that they'll come back. So it has to be a win-win. And that's what I suppose that's what you can see what David is doing there, that he has a repeat customers, and for the real angle for him is that it's labour for him, and it's a win-win. That animal will leave a bit of profit at the end for the person rearing them. And I would say farmers are gaining huge confidence in the DBI, or there are farmers that are gaining huge confidence in the DBI. And then there are farmers with mixed emotions on the DBI. And I think we need to get a bit more savvy with what bulls we pick. Like what David has done here in terms of the gestation length. So he has a date there where he's not going to that once it goes beyond, we'll call it the 10th of May or the 15th of May, he's not going to use a certain bull based on its gestation length. And he has that clear plan in his head, rather than going in the middle of June with a long gestation bull and then worrying about losing 2 weeks of milk in next March. He has a clear date. And then I suppose the other part of it, the angle we'd be coming at with groups is that you need pick within the calving difficulty that you know you're happy with. You don't blame the index for being wrong if there's going to be hard calvings. A lot of the time when you look back, it's actually the calving difficulty of the bull that was used. And David's done that. He's picked within his parameters. He doesn't want to go over a certain calving difficulty because I suppose that's another part. And David, maybe to come back to you, David, the cow has to calve. She has to get up after calving. What else is important to you there in terms of picking within the calving difficulty and the gestation length?
Okay. So David, I suppose the question that John is putting to you is in terms of the dairy calving piece. So obviously Tommy, from the angle he's coming at from the dairy B500, is looking at the carcass weight, as John has just said there, and the beef merit index. But from your perspective, obviously you have to protect your side of the equation too, and that's related to the calving difficulty and the gestation length. So we'll say, what is your calving difficulty threshold? And that varies from farm to farm. Like, what are you, like the blues now, they could be anywhere from 5-6% up to 10%, like.
So it's a very important point, and it's, I suppose, probably what we talked about the most when we did sit down and look at them. But I suppose the two blues that I picked, the calving difficulty is 4.6% and 6%. I am happy under 5, but I know some cows in the herd that will be able to handle up to 6%. But then it's about a sensible use of bulls. You know, I'm not trying to make any huge overcorrections here with bull teams. I want to make small incremental gains that are sensible, and then see the reality of it on the ground. And I suppose that is what the overall conversation where we ended up within our bull team is that, you know, we're not giving up too much on either side, to improve the calf crop quality.
And when you say the incremental gains now, David, are you saying that maybe this time next year, having had, please God, a good experience with the 6% calving Belgian blue, and you see another blue that's maybe gone to 7%, or that's coming in at 7% calving difficulty, but has that little bit of extra oomph from a carcass point of view, like that you might push it a little bit again, like?
So, there is a point of diminishing returns. Yeah. And, you know, I would say, what is the carcass weight that, or what is the carcass value that I want to chase? And it's not essentially about chasing a carcass value. It's very similar to the strategy you would use in dairy breeding. Like, I don't want an overcorrection. I just want to, on average, the whole calf crop to improve. And I suppose that came from when we looked at the calves on the ground and looked at the figures of the bulls that I used last year, you know, you could see the small incremental movements that did move the dial in terms of calf quality and what can be done, I suppose, in terms of calf quality, you know, as I said, for giving up very little on the calving difficulty, you know, or for a sensible move in calving difficulty in gestation.
Yeah, so the other question I have for you then is, and John has alluded to it in terms of the labour relief, I suppose, that it gives you. How important is it that you have these customers kind of already on hand for these calves? And obviously you've made it quite clear that you're trying to cater for them as much as you can in your strategy now here as well. But how important are they to you to know that you're going to be able to move that group of calves that you spoke about there a little while ago between the 20th of February and the 1st of March?
It's very, very important. It is the busiest time of the year. It's the most stressful time of the year. And I typically always found selling calves a stressful experience. I want to avoid as much as possible having to go to the march, because it's not just like, will I get a good price or not? It's time out of your day. You know, you're investing time going to the march, and, you know, weather can be bad. And like, there's a lot of different factors that influence that trade. You know, so the returning customer, it doesn't just, I suppose, give you an outlet where you get paid for a calf. Like there's a global picture in it, you know, where you have a relationship built up and they trust you, you trust them, and they'll bring the calves when they say they will, you know, and everyone gets a fair price and everyone understands, I suppose, the strategy. And I suppose that's part of what we're doing as well is, you know, so they can see year on year the improvements in the calf quality. And I'll try to explain to them, you know, I mean, what I'm talking about here and looking at the carcass weights and, you know, showing them that we're trying to develop a beef breeding strategy that will satisfy what they want as well. Because ultimately, like, our success is dependent on their success as well. You know, I heard a stat where over 50% of the people who enter the dairy beef industry exit again. And I suppose that's not a sustainable thing going forward, you know, like, so I think just between me and my customers, like, the relationship is important. I suppose they expect me to deliver them a good calf. You know, I hope that they will be successful with that calf going down the road.
Okay. So John, you said that there are mixed emotions kind of from the groups that you're seeing. Like David, obviously with the crossbreeding background, he could just throw his hat at it and say, oh, sure, I'm not going to get paid for these calves, or I'm not going to be able to get a market for these calves. But he's invested time and effort into selecting good bulls to deliver a good quality calf. And the fact that he already has these returning customers would suggest that what he's been doing to date even is good. And now he's taken it up another level. What's your perception, we'll say, from the feedback that you're getting from groups in terms of the direction of travel in relation to this?
The feedback I got 3 years ago is slightly different to the feedback I'm getting this year, in that people were a little bit more concerned about upping the calving difficulty or using different breeds a few years ago. Whereas since the DBI has been developed and it's now being accepted and people are getting more up to date on it, they're actually seeing that, well, a slight increase in the calving difficulty isn't actually meaning a major increase in the amount of jacking I'm having to do in the spring or hard calvings. So people are starting to get a little bit more open to it, I would say. Not everyone. And even within the people that are open to improving their DBI and the calf characteristics, they're going to have to probably bring it a step further and make sure that every bull picked on the is of good carcass value and beef sub index, because we even see it on a lot of farms where there's a couple of bulls that are very good and then there's a couple of bulls that have poor carcass merit. And we just need to make sure that all of the calves bred are of good quality and not just some. So that's just maybe looking at your beef bull choice and making sure that they're all over a certain carcass weight and maybe to keep it simpler, over a certain beef sub index value. And I think, look, we have people excelling in this space at this stage that they've really taken it on, and I think over time what we're going to see is that because the people who are buying them calves, these good calves, they're actually going to make a few pound out of them and they're going to maybe stay at it. Whereas we saw before, there was a high attrition rate or a lot of people leaving the industry of rearing calves, and that was feeding into the labor part of it. So if we can get the people that are buying them currently and maybe people that do buy them next year and the year after to get on well with them, they'll stick at it, hopefully, and then we get repeat customers and more people doing it. So I think these small incremental gains that Dave is talking about, the uptake of the DBI is going to it's just going to build on itself, I think, over the next few years, and I keep coming back to the win-win. It's a win for the dairy farmer by having a repeat customer, and it's a win for the beef farmer by getting these animals finished probably a month earlier with 20 or 30 kilos extra carcass. And I suppose that's what it's about.
Which I know what you just said there, like, would suggest that all DBI bulls aren't created equal. So it's not just the case of give me the best DBI bull you have, like.
And I won't answer that one. I'll actually flick that on to David in terms of, David, you've an experience of that from last year. We saw calves on the ground this year. Could you just give your experience on picking off the top of the DBI list?
Yeah, it was just a total lack of education, I suppose, on my own behalf. I just picked the top DBI bull that I could find, and it was heavily, heavily weighted towards the calving sub-index and the calving traits. And the carcass weight of the calves on the ground was actually very poor. No problems calving them, but just the quality was far inferior to the other bulls that I would have used.
Yeah, so basically you're it's like when the EBI came in first, a bull with a very large amount of milk and very low fertility could end up at the top of the list because it had so much milk. It's similar with the DBI. A bull with such easy calving and such short gestation, but with poor carcass merit, can end up at the top. And if we just pick the top, we mightn't actually do a good thing in terms of the quality of the calf. So, and that has happened, and it needs to be emphasized on a crossbred herd where in David's case, he has crossbred cows. So there isn't really any space for using a low carcass weight bull on a crossbred cow at this stage, Stuart.
I suppose the important thing to point out there, David, is you thought you were doing the right thing in looking for that bull or those bulls last year, and you ended up being disappointed. So people just need to take ownership of it as well. Like, I suppose being a little bit mean to you, you left the responsibility to someone else. You said, give me a good DBI bull, basically, and they gave you what you looked for, but it wasn't what you wanted.
Yeah, certainly, Stuart. Yeah, I mean, I'll hold my hands up. Yeah, I was guilty of it. And even just asking the person putting in the straws on the day to give me a good bull, you know, I have done that like for the last number of years as well. But I suppose it's a relatively small investment of my time to pick the bulls and have them organized. And it gives me there's a big return on that time investment. And yeah, the little bit of education that Tommy and John and myself went through picking the bulls this year, like it wasn't complex at all. And as I said all along, the small incremental gains and just the shift in focus, you don't have to give up much on calving ease and gestation length, and you can get a much superior calf on the ground.
Very good. So I have one last question for you, David. I come across guys on my travels that are excellent at picking up people to work on their farms. Maybe they seem to, one guy that I know, he literally asks everybody that he meets nearly that he's meeting for the first time, would you be interested in milking cows? Like, how did you acquire the clients that you have for the calves? And like, what would you recommend to people in terms of trying to get that person that's going to come onto the farm and take the calves, as you said, on the given day or date or whatever it is? And I suppose even the relationship, just before we do finish up, that relationship that you've developed with the person where you're actually rearing the calf for them. So just how did you get them, and what would you recommend to people you have the luxury in January that you know that there's 3, 4, 5 people, whatever, that are looking for so many calves, and you are guaranteed that you're going to move 60, 70, 80, 90, whatever it is, calves on this date, that date, and the other date. And that must be a huge relief to you to know that, that like, assuming that health status is okay, TB is okay, etc., they are going to go, and we know they're going to go, and there's no issue with them. And we kind of nearly, you can nearly budget, you nearly have your price agreed as well. Like, so there's huge benefits in that. Where, how did you develop that in the first place?
I suppose it's like a snowball effect, Stuart. And it is just, like you said, asking everybody. It's not trying to get everybody to take calves off you, but it's, you know, you will meet someone who has a specific need. And if you explain to them, I suppose, what you have, and you know what you have, and they can trust you, and you develop a mutual trust, and you deliver a calf with a high health status, I suppose that is the first most important thing, that is that, you know, when the calf hits the ground, they get the colostrum, they get the navel spray, and, you know, they're put in a clean pen. And like that is, I suppose, regardless of what beef bowl you pick or anything, like, you know, that is still the number one for calf quality and calf health. And then I suppose how it happened is that they nearly become a salesperson for you, you know, so someone might see the calves and say, that's a nice bundle of stock you have. Where did you come across them? And then that person then, you know, will take 10 this year, 15 next year, and 20 the following year. And, you know, if they're getting what they want out of it, and, you know, I'm also giving them a bit of support on, you know, like how to rear them, vaccination programs and stuff like that. And it's basically just explaining how we do it with our own heifers, and, you know, the calf rearing protocols that we use for our own heifers. And, you know, people are able to replicate that then with the beef calves. And, you know, they see that, you know, it actually works quite well. And, you know, you can get a good calf weaned and off to grass. And, you know, they're developing equity with, you know, not a huge amount of cost going in. And that's, I suppose, it just snowballs from there then, Stuart. Yeah.
Yeah, very good. That's an interesting point. I will say maybe some of the reason for that fall off that you mentioned there earlier is because of bad experiences and maybe health issues and challenges like that. So just that discussion that you've had with those people that you're dealing with, maybe they've changed something, they've given a vaccination that they weren't given before, and they're happier now with their system, and they're continuing to buy more, continuing to buy what they were buying, or maybe after increasing because they're happy with the way it's operating for them. So that's a very interesting point. And I'm delighted that you said the health status of the calf is important as well, because it is like Alan Dillon and Tommy obviously are saying that's what people are looking for, is that healthy calf, and all the beef traits in the world aren't any good if they're going to die on you, like, so hugely important piece there. Look, time has flown by, we've half an hour gone there, some very, very important points and excellent points, David, and delighted that you've gotten benefit from your own perspective as well out of the conversations with John and Tommy, and hopefully that what we've done here now will help kind of spread the word in relation to that piece as well. So thanks very much for coming on and joining us, and thanks to you too, John.
Thanks, Stuart.
That's all for this week's episode of the Dairy Age podcast, and my thanks to David Gannon and John McCabe for joining me on this week's show. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe to the podcast. You can listen on Apple and Google Podcasts as well as Spotify. And for more information, go to the Chagas website at chagas.ie. I'm Stuart Childs, and join us next time for your Dairy Age.